Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pitcher's Eye with Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks manager Michael Schlacht. Pitcher's Eye is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Redhawks manager questions about the team, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Michael's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, Michael talks to us about the opening weekend of the season. He provides some pitching tips. And did the skipper think it was Yanni or Laurel? Let's find out on Pitcher's Eye.
Well, let's welcome back manager Michael Schlacht. Michael, do you have team update for us?
Well, we're finishing up the end of the first road trip here. And, there's no real team update other than we're continuing to watch the team evolve and become what they can be. We've been excited to see some things on the field and the things that we need to work on, we're addressing. So there's some early on, some base running and just some approaches and things like that need some fine tuning. But these guys are pros and we're excited to continue on and get back up to Fargo-Moorhead and open our home opener there on Friday night.
You take 2 out of 3 from Texas. You win the first against Cleburne last night. What are your thoughts about the team at this point?
Well, the word that comes to mind with these guys is resiliency. And I say it a lot. We've been down in some games, and we've come back. We've had the lead and held it. And even in the game that we lost, we put up a good fight. We had runners on. We had opportunities to do something. And the best part about this club is they're never down. In the short time that we've been playing games that matter, I've watched these guys bounce back from adversity and just maintain a calm even when we're down. You can't teach stuff like that. From the top down, you can exhibit, certain leadership traits. You can stay calm. You can, say, hey, let's learn from this. There's different things that we can do, as leaders, but these guys have to have that in them, and I'm proud to say they do. So that's been the exciting part about this. Resiliency is what I've seen, and facing adversity head on.
Well, let's head to fan questions this week. We start out with Lou, who would like to know, how many games do you think it will take to win the North Division this season?
Well, the North is tough. It's hard to know in a given year. I'm going to go ahead and throw a number out of 65. I feel like that's probably going to be the number, give or take a few, that's going to be necessary to win. 65, that's my guess.
Don would like to know, last week talking about being a nice guy made me wonder if you believe that being a nice guy actually works to your advantage because opposing players might have thought you were not as aggressive on the mound.
Maybe so. I don't know. I guess it depends on how well they know me or how I come across. I know that people, have told me and you've told me and hey, you're a nice guy. How does that play out in managing and all that? I know when I was playing, coaches occasionally told me that they thought I didn't, I wasn't fiery enough or whatever, but you can't really change your personality. I can't change who I am. I think that, as we spoke about in the last edition of the show, you can be a nice guy and still be competitive. You can be a nice guy and still be truthful. You can be a nice guy and still, tell people what they want to hear regardless of whether or not, or you can tell them what they need to hear rather than what they want to hear, things like that. So, I would say, I don't think being a nice guy is any bearing on that.
I don't think anybody ever thought that Greg Maddux was fiery. He had a pretty good career.
Right, no, exactly. And you know what? There's a lot of those guys, like Tom Glavine. The Braves references are big with me, obviously, growing up in the 90s in Atlanta. Watch some of the best players ever. I know there were some fiery ones. But a lot of times, the people that maybe don't wear their emotion on their sleeve or you don't know exactly what they're thinking, sometimes that plays to the advantage too. And, Glavin and Maddux and, Smoltz was a little bit different. He was bulldogish. But there's plenty of people that appear to be a nice guy or laid back or whatever, and they did just fine.
Dave would like to know, what are your thoughts about parents who are over the top with their kids during high school and little league sports? Come on now.
Yeah. Having a 3-year-old and a 2-month-old, my two kids aren't really even close to team sports yet. Well, I can't say that because the age of travel ball getting younger and younger. But, you know, I think about it, I watch them, and I can see how the tendency of wanting to be all about them and protect them and, you know, do your best. And I can see that tendency in myself, but at the same time, I've known from a coaching side how detrimental pushing your kid too hard can be. I mean, you know, I've had these kids show up at practice when coaching high school ball or travel ball in the off season, and really it's sad because they're playing with so much pressure and they're playing with such a fear of failure because they're worried about what their parents think. Number one, it takes away the enjoyment of the game, and number two, it doesn't allow them to perform at their highest potential. So I really disagree with it. You know, I think especially at the amateur level, you know, in the pro level, our job is to win games. Like, that's my job. My job is to win, or I won't have a job. At the amateur level, you got to develop and have fun and learn the game. That's your job at that point. So if parents can keep that in perspective, number one, I think their kids will play better, they'll learn more, and I think it'll make for a more enjoyable home life as well.
Byron would like to know, he says, why do you think there are so many pitchers needing Tommy John surgery these days? It didn't seem to be that way 10 years ago, but now it's like a regular thing.
Well, I think part of it is the technology and the science is getting better. You know, the way that we can read the body, you know, with these MRIs, these CAT scans, these X-rays, everything's improving. Also, the understanding of the body, you know, with all these science experiments and you know, like, organizations like Driveline, what they're doing, slow motion cameras, mechanical things, you know, you can see things you never saw before. I think that's part of why, you know, because I know, like, when I was with the Ranger system, Nolan Ryan was our team president with the Rangers, and he would talk about it occasionally. He would say, I'm pretty sure I don't have a UCL, but we didn't have the technology to see that or not, so I just pitched. You know, that's part of it. But then, you know, if you're looking for maybe a cause, there's a lot of overthrowing these days. And what I mean by that is not many people are taking care of their arm. It's not so much whether or not you throw a curveball or a fastball, and this is my opinion. It's more, you know, pitch counts, not taking the proper rest between outings, things like that. I think it's probably how much kids are throwing and how much people are throwing year round type thing versus, you know, what actual pitches are being thrown.
That makes me wonder then, do you believe that there becomes a point where a kid shouldn't be spending, just even playing catch out in the yard or something? Is there a point, a limit to what you would want them to be doing?
It's hard to say. I mean, when I think about it, I've heard a couple different arguments, and both of them I understand. I just don't know the answer to. You know, one of them is you need proper rest, and I think this is the James Andrews side of it. He says you need proper rest. Because, you know, your ligaments, your body, your muscles, everything needs to be able to recover. I've also heard the argument of what happens if you don't drive your car for 2 straight months and then you start it back up again. It's probably not going to run at the proper level. You know, I've heard that argument as well, to where you don't necessarily have to be throwing it 100% off the mound all your pitches all winter long, but you do need to play catch. You do need to keep your arm moving. Because if you don't, you know, it's like the same reason that you wouldn't just stop driving your car and then expect it to be at peak performance.
That makes sense. Abe says, I think guys who cheat should be kept out of the Hall of Fame. What do you think?
Such a hot topic, especially given that Palmeiro hit a homer off the team last night. You know, I see both sides of it. I understand why people would say, you know, if you cheated and we know that you cheated, you shouldn't be let in. You know, I think we've talked about this before. There has to be proof, in my opinion. And I don't remember if it was you that I was telling that or somebody else, but I said, look, if there's proof that someone did it, you know, absolute hard proof, and they're guilty, I understand why they wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Because that, you know, that they were altered and it was an unfair advantage. Speculation to me, pure speculation with no proof, I don't believe warrants it. Like, until you can show me proof, kind of like the judicial system, if you can't show me proof, Like, how are you guilty then? Because someone said something or whatever. I mean, you know, without proof, I don't think you can leave somebody out of the Hall of Fame.
Sean would like to know, he says, I know you're a really nice guy, but tell us you will get ejected at least once this year.
Well, I thought I was going to get ejected one of the games in Grand Prairie. I went out, so we had a call where the third base umpire called interference on Tommy Mendoza, which, you know, and he let the runner from third score. I go out there and I say, look, the ball was thrown from Ahart, our center fielder. It got past the catcher, and as the guy rounded third, Solomon, our pitcher, had the ball in his hand. He was back there backing up home. And what ended up happening was Solomon's two steps from home plate, holding the baseball, yet they awarded the runner at third home. So I went out there and I told the umpire, I said, look, man, this has to be a judgment call. You can't tell me that the runner on third that you just called interference on would be able to score with our pitcher holding the ball two steps from home plate. You can't tell me that. And if you can, I'll go sit down. And it turned into this big argument. Finally, they get the umpiring crew together and they overturn it and they said I was right. But, you know, I got a little heated there for a while. I was like, I'm actually kind of getting a little angry about this. You know, you take ownership of your team, and I love these guys. And I want these guys to be successful, and I want the Redhawks to be successful, you know, because number one, these are good people, but number two, they want it badly. And so I'm going to go to bat, and I'm going to fight for these guys. And so I have a feeling something's going to happen over the course of 100 games where you might see me get chucked. So, hey, if nothing else, it'll be entertaining, something to tell a story about.
Ricky asks, are there ways to improve a pickoff move? I just can't seem to make mine better. I need help.
Okay. Well, I'll revert back to my pitching coach here for a minute. You know, my pitching coach prowess, I guess if you want to call it. So, basically, the thing about a pickoff move is that a lot of times people try to throw the ball harder to first base, thinking that that's what they need to do, when in reality you need better footwork. So the biggest thing with a pickoff move has to be, number one, footwork. How quick are your feet? How controlled is your body? And how quick do you release the ball? You know, you'll see time and time again guys try to throw it 100 miles an hour over at the first base when they make a bad throw down the line, start the bus, and go home. When really, if you can have quick feet, good controlled body, quick release, that's going to improve your pickoff move more than how hard you throw the ball over. Now, the other thing that goes with that quick release, good body, you know, quick feet, all that, is put a good throw. You know, and the name of the game is giving that first baseman an opportunity to, number one, catch the ball, but number two, be able to apply a tag quick. So you don't want to throw it too high, you don't want to throw it too low where he's got to pick it and then tag. You kind of want that around the knee, mid-shin height throw so that he can put a tag down quick on the guy. So I would say all that together, kind of think about those things, and hopefully that improves your pickoff move a little bit.
Mike asks, if the Redhawks are your dream job.
I think being in professional baseball is my dream job, but I'm going to tell you what, when I got to Fargo in 2015, you know, and you talk about a fan base that loves baseball, knows baseball, and was watching baseball, man, the Fargo Moorhead community rallies around the Redhawks. And then you talk about a rich tradition of winning. You talk about ownership that cares and that gives you every opportunity to win. You talk about a good group of coaches, a good group of guys. I mean, I'm very, very blessed. And I don't necessarily, I don't wake up every day and say, you know what my dream job would be? I don't do that. What I do is, I try to, in a way, I try to bloom where I'm planted, so to speak. And what I understand is that this is a blessing to have this opportunity. I'm thankful for this job. And so while I'm here, it is my dream job. You know, because I'm here, I'm getting to coach, I'm getting to manage a professional baseball team in the town, in a great town. You know, my son was born there. We love the people. We love the owners, all that kind of stuff. And so, If this ends up being a long haul type thing, I would love to spend many years in a Fargo Moorhead Redhawks uniform. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure, you know, where God will have me. And the cool thing is that for now, we're loving life in this community. I'm really blessed to be you know, the Red Hawks manager, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. And so all I know is I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm glad that I'm able to have this chance, and I hope that there's many years of it.
Regina would like to know, what's the best part of being a new dad for you, and what's the most challenging part?
Ooh, the most challenging part is right now being on the road. You know, I got two boys at home and a wife, and they're doing things and growing and learning and playing, and I can't be a part of it. You know, thank goodness for FaceTime and Skype and all that. You know, technology makes it a little easier, but the hardest part is being away. You know, my wife needs help. You know, and I applaud and I praise single parents. I can't imagine. You know, so that when I'm gone and my wife is balancing this, you know, it makes me just really want to pray for these single parents that have to do this on their own, and it shows you the sacrifice and just how much love for their kids there are, because it's not easy. And so that's the hard part, is being gone, you know, away from my family. The best part is watching them grow. I mean, you know, when I first had my son, and, you know, now my other son, I got two of them now, they, you know, everyone told me, you know, you're going to blink and they'll be graduating high school, or they'll be gone, they'll be grown, you know, and it's so true. Feels like yesterday my three-year-old was born. It feels like yesterday my two-month-old was born. It's like somehow they're 3 and 2 months old. It's like, and I know before I know it, they'll be 15 and 12, you know. It's like, what's going on?
They do grow quick, that's for sure. Randy would like to know, were there coaches who tried to persuade you to play basketball over baseball?
I think that, like, when certain coaches saw my height, they said, you should play basketball. And then when they saw me try to play basketball, they said, stick to baseball. And that's about all I'll say about that.
Jacob says, your Braves look pretty good this year.
They do. You know, that's the cool thing. There is a pipeline in minor league baseball, right, or with major league organizations. And that's what the scouting department's for, you know, both international and the draft. And, you know, like the Houston Astros, everybody was like, wow, the Houston Astros are so good. It's like, well, that's like 6 years in the making of developing minor league players and scouting and you know, drafting and signing. And so that's what the Braves went through. I mean, they needed a rebuild. They got some young talent. You know, you're seeing Acuna and Ozzy Albies and these guys that are coming up and making a name for themselves. But they were developing in the minor leagues since they were 16, 17, 18 years old. And so now they're getting their opportunity at the big league level, and they're great. And the Braves are successful, but this has been a 5 or 6 year process of the making for them. But, you know, we were spoiled with the Braves of the 90s, winning and winning and winning. Never, you know, won championship in 95, but, you know, it was like we were in the playoffs every year. And then that kind of went away. And, you know, now we're watching a team with the best record in the National League. I think at least they were yesterday. And then, just exciting things are happening, and so it's fun. It's cool for the city of Atlanta to get reinvigorated again in that new ballpark, and hopefully they make a run.
Chuck Astley says, I understand not liking someone, especially a politician, but I don't understand wanting them to fail miserably when it is us who suffers for them doing so. Isn't that the ultimate example of cutting off your nose despite your face?
Yeah, I guess it is. But it's true of anything. I mean, you could talk about politics. You could talk about at your job. You could talk about, you know, in baseball, whatever it is. Like, if there's somebody that's in a leadership position and there's a number of people that either benefit or don't from the success of that individual, I don't understand why you would want them to fail. You know, I mean, to me, it's a little bit selfish in that way, because you're not thinking about other people. So, whether, you know, whoever you're talking about, you know, the president, whether you're talking about the government, whether you're talking about a baseball team, a school, you know, a job, if you're wanting your leader to fail and you know that it hurts other people, I think, you know, there needs to be some reevaluation there, because, you know, the world would be a better place if we could understand that certain people are in positions for certain reasons, and you know, that at the end of the day, a successful leader means successful people. And when that happens, the world becomes a better place.
Stu has a couple of questions for you. We start with, what do you do to pass time on long bus trips?
Well, what don't we do? We watch movies. Sometimes I'm on my phone looking at social media. You know, a lot of the time, especially if it's a shorter trip, you know, 4 or 5 hours, we're going to another city. We'll be, myself and the staff will take some time, and we'll look at the roster and the stats and the lineup of the team we're facing, kind of formulate a plan, put something together in regards of the scouting report for each guy, you know, so that when we get there that night, we know what we're getting into. The longer ones, you know, you obviously do that still, but then there's more time. And so, you know, the bus is great in regards of, you know, and especially on with the staff that I have, you know, Chris Coast can tell you so many stories. I mean, he started as a Red Hawk and he ended as a World Series champion with the Phillies. He's seen a lot in baseball, just as I have, just as a lot of guys have. And so you start telling these baseball stories and it gets really fun. So that passes a lot of the time too.
Stu also would like to know, he says, that accident with that hockey team must really make taking the bus to games a little more tense for you.
Ooh, that was a tragedy, man. And when you think about that and understanding that, you know, we do bus everywhere, you know what it does? It makes you sad for those family and friends of those of the people in Humboldt. And you know what else it does is it makes you realize how quick and how brief life can be. And so you give thanks for every moment, you know. When I step on that bus or when I get in my car or when I walk down the street or any time, I try to just give thanks that I have the opportunity to still be alive, and I just, you know, pray for safety because, you know, with a family back home, I can't imagine something happening. You know, I can't imagine leaving them. And so it really puts it into perspective, and it makes you think, and it makes you give thanks that we are still here, but it also reminds you how quickly things can change.
We have two questions from Diane. The first one is, if Jesus was a baseball player, what position do you think he would have?
Oh, I think he'd probably be the owner. I don't know if he would. I don't know. What would he be? The owner? The GM? He could probably pitch and catch at the same time. I don't know. That's hard to say. I guess if I had to pick a position on the field, maybe a catcher? Because he's got everybody in front of him. He's kind of the leader. He can see what's going on. He's calling all the plays, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a stretch, but I would say maybe. That would be my best guess. That's a good question. I'll have to think about that. You put me on the spot with that one.
Diane would also like to know, if you lived in any era in history, what would it be?
I really enjoy right now. I can't imagine going backwards necessarily. I'm thankful for technology, both what we can do medicinally, travel-wise, you know, the fact that I can see my family 1,000 miles away at the touch of a button, you know, pulling statistics. I mean, you talk about a number of things that technology has improved around the world. I'm thankful for this time, you know, and you see, wow, they're coming up with that next, and this can do that, and that my car can park itself. Not my car, but, you know, I don't have a car like that. You know, people say that, like, I'm going to touch this button, and my car will, like, it's amazing what we can do. It's crazy, and so it's cool. I think I would live right now. I'm thankful for this opportunity to be living in this time because it's crazy what the stuff we can do.
Jim says, did you see that Yanni or Laurel story? Could you tell?
Yeah, it was Laurel right away. I feel like if you heard Yanni, you're lying. No, I'm just kidding. But I definitely heard Laurel. I mean, it was clear as day. And so, you know, that's an interesting... I guess that goes back to an earlier question. How do you pass time on the bus? Because we were all listening to that, and everyone was saying, it's Laurel. And we had one guy yell out Yanni, and everyone was like, you're lying. So it was interesting. So, yeah, that kind of answers two questions. What do we do on the bus? And did I hear Yanni or Laurel? And the answer is we listened to that, and I heard Laurel.
How many times did it take you to listen to it before you were sure?
Right away.
Right away. Awesome.
I mean, like, first thing, Laurel. Laurel. I was like, it's not even close. There's no Yanni in there at all.
Our final question of the week says, it sounded like you were with Rob in person in the last show, so tell us the truth. Is he as goofy as he seems?
Wow, it really put me on the spot here. Yeah, I was with you in person in Wichita. It was nice to meet you, and I'm not the one to gauge Goofy, because obviously the person that wrote that hasn't met me. So here's what I'll say. There were two really goofy guys doing an interview in Wichita. Is that a fair answer?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. It's fun to be goofy, so there's nothing wrong with that at all. So
you know what? I totally understand. You know what's cool about being goofy is you know, you're not, and I'm in this too. It's like we're not trying to be who other people say we're trying to be. You know, and I could say myself. I mean, I'm going to be who I am and have a good time, and you know, just be myself. I mean, there's no other way to be, especially as short as life is. So.
As long as I don't have to dance, that's all I'm asking. Then I'm okay.
You can ask my wife about that. Yeah, like I'll slow dance with her. You know, that's cool. But anytime that music starts getting up in tempo, I'm like, well, I'm gonna go sit down and have a cup of water.
Well, thanks for joining us this week, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
We want to thank Manager Michael Slack for joining us on Pitcher's Eye this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to send the Fargo manager, please send them to us at askmichael@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askmichael@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Pitcher's Eye.